Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 55. Uncertainty, yen carry trade, deflation, inflation, economists changing their mind over the weekend, 180. We get to break it all down. We've got Kathy and Brett with us today. Kathy, can you tee it up? It seems like a lot of what you've been saying is starting to be repeated by people making 180s out there. So what are you seeing? And then we can get into trying to make heads and tails of what just happened over the weekend.
Sure. Well, in terms of the 180, this is the fastest I've ever seen this happen in my career, where, you know, you've got the consensus view thinking, okay, inflation's going to be a little stickier. There's going to be a soft landing. And they were moseying along. And all the while we were saying, wait a minute, the Fed raised interest rates 24-fold in little more than a year's time, and there are going to be ramifications for this, and I think we're seeing them now. We've been saying the ramifications are rolling recession. So one sector, housing, went down right away in 22 when they raised rates, and then autos turned punk. Commercial real estate's in a mess. Office first, now multifamily. Capital spending is starting to capitulate. And now we're seeing the consumer rail against the high prices that they've been paying and looking for bargains. And so we're seeing consumer companies coming under some pressure. All of this while, and we weren't talking about this that much, but I do know you heard me say, wow, something's going on out there. This shouldn't be happening. I've never experienced this before. One of those was, you know, the treatment of long duration assets like ours so badly, as, you know, what became known as the Mag 6 hits all time highs, and we see the most concentrated market ever. And one of the answers may be now the carry trade that everyone's talking about. So the carry trade is essentially speculators and investors borrowing in yen. So they're borrowing at what used to be 0% rates, very, very low interest rates, and turning around, taking that money, converting it into dollars. Historically, they would have bought long-term treasury yields, where the yield was high and rising relative to interest rates in Japan. But it appears, given the reaction of the unwinding of this trade, that they weren't buying long-term bonds. They may have been buying stocks like the Mag 6, which had huge cash positions and some were starting to pay dividends as sort of a sure thing. And here we are trying to figure out, okay, how big is this trade? How leveraged is this trade? How much debt is there involved? And who's going to be left holding the bag?
Nick, go ahead.
We've been talking a lot about this over the past few days. What does this potentially remind you of? How do these situations or scenarios typically end? What do you need to see happen here?
Well, usually there's a one-way trade and it lasts for a long time. And, you know, everybody thinks it's a shoe-in. And it usually ends with some kind of rotation away from what has been the popular trade to something else. I'll tell you what this also reminds me of. It reminds me of the month we were going, we understood what COVID was, and the market was saying, oh my gosh, the globe is going into a depression. And so the markets went down around the globe, 25% to 30%. And strategies like ours were hit even more. And yet, as I was saying at the time, and I will say now, I think it could be a little bit of a replay, or that was a warm up for this. I was saying, wait a minute, who do you think is going to solve the problems that we have out there? And back then it was COVID, right? I think today, and of course the answer was, the multi-omics portfolios, the global digitalization theme, that was a very big deal. Today, I think the problem is pricing is coming down around the world and corporate margins are going to face pressure. And so who's going to solve that problem or what's going to solve? Innovation is. And of course, it's a perfect time for this to happen because AI, we think, is going to boost productivity dramatically and maybe help buffer margins against lower prices. So it reminds me of that time, but I think this is much broader based in terms of pricing power, companies losing pricing power and being forced to change the way they do things.
Yeah, and I think we should timestamp this because information's coming out very real time, right? So it's noon on Monday, August 5th. We had the Nikkei down over 12%. You had markets, US markets spooked, but they've come back a fair amount so far today. Still unclear what will happen. VIX peaked to third or fourth highest, depending on if you're going back to other data before it started. Brett, that was all coming from you. So I'll tee you up here with, you also looked at crypto and seeing where the pain is. What are you currently thinking?
Yeah, I think we should disaggregate what's happening in markets and leverage from then the result of that or the possible result of that and how that might result in corporate behavior and kind of like the impact on innovation, the impact on liquidity. And so just from a where are we in markets, if you look at the longest running volatility index going back to 86, then this is the fourth most volatile market event in history to 86, behind Black Friday in 87, which is where you had, and Kathy, you might be able to describe this more completely, but you basically had like portfolio insurance schemes that were designed to auto sell, and they created this cascading liquidation event. Markets were off. People were very confused by it. And as it turns out, there was nothing, structurally wrong with the economy or anything else. I mean, we recovered and it was probably a great buying opportunity at that time.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Can I just say that I was there. Yeah. And yes, portfolio insurance was going to limit everyone's risk. Of course, insurance fails when everybody tries to get out the door at the same time. So, and the market went down almost 25% in one day. That was Black Monday. And you're right. It did change the Fed's positioning a bit. And really nothing happened to the economy. Nothing happened. The Fed came in, added more liquidity, and the economy was fine. So yes, that was one. And then, of course, there was 08, 09.
Yeah, global financial crisis. And there, the volatility was, I'd say the volatility was earned, as in there was a huge amount of leverage in a bunch of systemically important financial institutions and the workout of what to do with the bad debt that they held and all of the inventoried risk globally was extraordinarily painful and resulted in the Great Recession as kind of leverage came out of the system and everybody pulled into cash. And my gosh, what a time. And then COVID is the third most volatile event in the time series. And so March of 2020 and the world shuts down. So like from a market freakout perspective, that as a measure, you can say, whoa, markets are really like, you have to go back at least a half century to see as like freaking out a day in the markets as this, or at least it's in the top five, call it. So then I think, so there is leverage. It's people that have been borrowing in yen, and Kathy, you mentioned the mini multifold increase that the Fed went through. Well, Japan effectively increased their interest rates infinity percent. It was like the infinite money glitch. You can borrow at zero and then buy at something else. And when people do that, they get comfortable with that. They have like an amount of kind of exposure that they think is reasonable. And then there's a multi-standard deviation event in a metric that they don't expect to move that much. And they're caught off sides. And then a lot of people are stuck with risk that they didn't perceive as risk. And so kind of like the unwinding of that and the counterparties that are exposed to that is potentially still in the discovery process here. I don't think we can say for sure that we know what exactly is or has been broken by this, but it's likely there's something out there. And then the other thing that is a little odd going on right now is the crypto or the trade making firm Jump Trading, which has a big crypto book, has been unwinding its book in a way that is, to me, suggests that they are being forced to unwind it, as in they've been doing it in ways that are not very market friendly and in reasonably large size. And so then that's had a, combining those two has had a particular impact on Ethereum, certainly, but the entire crypto market broadly. And
the CEO of Jump left. So
well, the CEO of the crypto book, he was a young person. So if you're 25 years old, you haven't been through that many market cycles. I know crypto happens very quickly, but there is some value in wisdom.
We're trying to connect some dots. The CEO of that division leaves. They are unwinding the book. Clearly, I don't know if the regulators have gotten in there. We don't know what is going on. Connecting the dots, they could have been part of the carry trade in ways that we just don't understand, you know, because that became such a go-to. It's been a go-to since early 21. You know, and anyone who has taken on a trade like that typically has been rewarded, certainly if they've moved into higher yielding assets. And when you look even further back, you can see this yen carry trade extends back into 2011. The yen has been cut in half since then. Now, it did go through a period where it stabilized, but even if you were doing the carry trade and it was just stable, that was okay. Now it has just gone against. We've gone from 162 on the yen to 142 in a week. I know this seems upside down. That means the dollar has gone down versus the yen. The yen has gone up. So all of those speculators and others betting that the yen would continue to at least be stable or go down, they are probably being hit by margin calls. And we're trying to figure out who they are, where, because it does seem much bigger than just crypto, right? Right. I think it is much bigger than crypto. Yeah. And so,
well, and jump trading has a tradition. Like, you could imagine if there's a trading firm that gets cut out, you know, it would be somebody that has a crypto book and also is running trade making in kind of other areas. I would say just try to Google search and figure out who those guys are. It's very mysterious. We know they've taken multi-hundred-million-dollar hits against FTX and against the wormhole hack, and they were Terra Luna exposed, and kind of have seemingly danced through it all. But you know, we don't know like how they're financed, what their balance sheet looks like, how much leverage they could have taken on. And like you say, Kathy, there is leverage out there on the carry trade. Like if you look at yen lending by Japanese banks, it's on the order of $1.7 trillion, it looks like, about half of which is to other bank and the other half is to non-bank financial institutions. So think of like the shadow banking sector. So if you have $700 billion of loaned money out there that is bought stuff, and suddenly that's all, the cost of that loaned money has gone up, and suddenly the assets that's supposed to collateralize the loan money is falling apart, then it takes time for that to unwind and cascade through and hit people.
One other thing on that, the assumption, as I mentioned earlier, is that the carry trade involved, you know, shorting yen or borrowing yen and buying government bonds. That does not seem to be what has happened. Or if it is, what we're seeing now, there's been a flight to safety into bonds. They have not been selling off, as you might expect, if they were the other side of the carry trade, unless this flight to safety is overwhelming that. But it does seem that this hypothesis, and Nick, you were the one who surfaced it. I know that I had been saying this Mag 6 trade is very unusual, that it would be only these six stocks driving the market forward. But it kind of makes sense in the context now of this carry trade.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting scenario potentially playing out. I do want to bring it back to one other aspect of, you know, something that could have major influence in where we go from here, which is the Fed. You know, Brett, you mentioned the BOJ just changed their rates. We kept ours unchanged, but then we had a very weak jobs report on Friday. Kathy, if you're Jerome Powell looking at all of what has gone on over the weekend, what do you do or what do you say to him? And like, how do you address this, given it's only been a few days?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The day or a couple of days before the Fed made its decision, the former president of the New York Fed, Bill Dudley, came out and said, okay, when the facts change, I changed my mind and I'm changing my mind. I think they should ease tomorrow or in this next move. And I thought to myself, wow, what does he see out there? So they didn't do it. And we've gotten two very weak reports, the Purchasing Managers Index and the employment. If you look through the employment, it was a very weak report. And I have a feeling that the Fed, if the markets don't settle down, is going to have an emergency meeting before the September meeting. You have Jeremy Siegel, a very well-known professor from Wharton, who's calling for immediately, 75 to 100 basis points. I think what this is saying is more and more people are beginning to understand that the risk is not inflation. It is deflation. It is falling prices. And because the Fed has been so focused on inflation as the risk, it's almost become dangerous, you know, that they haven't been looking in the right direction. And so I think Austin Goolsbee, who's a voting member of the Fed, this morning said, we're paying attention. We need to pay attention to the real Fed funds rate. And if you believe that inflation is coming down and will drop below 3% and then even drop to zero, you'll see a real Fed funds rate that is going to force them into action. So I think it's now clear they're going to ease. It's also clear more and more people are focusing on some of the falling prices out there and crypto among them, you know, and asking questions, what's going on out there?
And Kathy, can you just quickly spell out good deflation versus bad deflation?
Yes.
What's the easiest way to understand it?
Yes. So good deflation is associated with innovation, technologically enabled innovation. So we've centered our research from the beginning on learning curves. And we try and measure the rate at which the costs associated with each technology fall. So our world is used to deflation. We expect it. But most of the rest of the world is not used to deflation. They haven't seen it for any long period of time. And so you get companies that have relied on for their profits on raising prices, and now they can't do that anymore. So good deflation is associated with technology. Bad deflation is a function of companies just raising prices and basically the consumer saying no, and they're being forced now to cut prices when their cost structures don't allow for it. They do not have falling cost structures. And so that's bad for those companies. Bad deflation is also associated with an overwhelming amount of debt. You know, it's, you know, where you have too much debt and you just need to sell at whatever price to service the debt. I think that's a bad deflation as well. Bad deflation, the third one is, you know, the Fed not recognizing that it's too tight and that monetary policy is causing a generalized decline in the price level. And you haven't heard people talk about this or like this, but I think you're going to hear a lot more about it.
And then what about from the devil's advocate perspective? I've seen this out there on X as well, which is, you know, we talk about the wall of worry. There's still a lot of cash on the sideline out there. People want, they see the Mag 6, you know, this can't go on forever. They want it to come down. Is this just another brick in the wall of worry and things keep marching on from here?
You mean in terms, wall of worry is a stock market term. So yes, you build a wall of worry and that helps a bull market. You know, you don't want everyone believing that it's straight up and to the right and there's no risk. You want a lot of angst out there. I think the bull market has been unhealthy in that it's been so concentrated. We've been saying for some time that a really strong bull market would broaden up and broaden out and benefit many more stocks. And if we're right and interest rates are going to come down and we're not facing something we just don't understand, you know what I mean? It's that this is just a carry trade that should disappear, and that other companies now and stocks should be rewarded as interest rates come down. That could be a fantastic bull market. What would happen is you'd get the Mag 6, maybe marking time, maybe benefiting, but not nearly as much as all of the companies that have been neglected over these last 3 years.
Yeah, I think that this definitely gives the Fed much more permission to be lenient. One, because they're going to be worried about kind of where the tentacles of this like hit other financial institutions and financial actors. And so they'll be sensitive to some catastrophic risk. And then if you look at their commentary on the financial conditions index, of which like the loosest component of which has been stocks, as in kind of like they see the financial conditions as tight, but that financial conditions have the tightness of financial conditions have actually been diminishing somewhat because of stock market appreciation, kind of this sell-off, kind of the move in volatility, which does impact kind of the people's ability to operate in the options market, probably gives them, and the weak, more marginally weaker macroeconomic data gives them permission to loosen aggressively. And so then from, I think from an innovation assets perspective, so long as you cannot be exposed to some kind of like cascading leverage risk that you have on your balance sheet somewhere or the counterparty, this is actually quite good for innovation because the Fed will cut, you know, companies. I think it's interesting that kind of like the more multiomics type names are doing okay here because I think people are a little bit anticipating that, hey, maybe there will be kind of like an ability to tap an equity market here because of Fed loosening, and it'll allow people to like, you know, slightly extend their time horizons and then fund these longer term projects. You know, that seems like a reasonable outcome, exclusive of the fact that, you know, if you think about somebody borrowing yen to invest in the US market, they're not going in like, I'm going to invest in kind of the a mid-cap, you know, biotech company. They're saying, well, I want treasuries, but I want more juice yield out of my treasuries. And hey, look at this stock, this like this tech stock, Microsoft, is giving me dividends. So it's like a treasury and it's AI exposed. I'm going to borrow a lot of money and get into that thing, you know? And I think that companies will respond to this. There will be a corporate response where it's like, we need to like pull in horns more. Let's cut some heads. Let's like strip out some cost structure. And so a company like Microsoft, which is delivering great kind of AI products, but on a seat-based pricing basis, potentially has some pain on their top line coming. If people start being like, well, gosh, you know, I really like, well, I don't know about like, but we need Office 365 to operate as a company. And Microsoft has been trying to sell us, you know, the OpenAI Copilot on top of it for $30 a month per seat in addition. So are we getting enough bang for the buck to justify that across our entire organization when we could kind of roll our own using, you know, Palantir or OpenAI, we're using kind of startups that are not charging on a seat-based basis, but just on the number of tokens you're generating with the underlying model, particularly like we're going to fire some people and the people that we have still in the org need to be more productive. So they're maybe using this stuff more intensively, but we're paying for it in a different way. I think that could flow through and change the forward business dynamics in an interesting way.
It's interesting in this earnings season, analysts have been looking, okay, these are the AI beneficiaries, so they think, and they are, but they were expecting accelerated revenue growth. They didn't get it. They didn't get it from anyone. And so that was a first source of disappointment. It's like, wait a minute. You know, these companies are spending so much on NVIDIA's GPUs and, you know, okay, that there must be someone benefiting dramatically, revenue growth accelerating, and it didn't happen. And now possibly you would have job cutbacks impacting any seat-based company in terms of models. So I agree.
Yeah. Terrific. Kathy and Brett, thank you so much for joining us. As we always say, innovation takes hold in tumultuous times.
Yes.
Certainly tumultuous if you believe the VIX.
Yes.
So we'll see what happens. And I'm sure more information is going to come out over the week. So we'll see everyone next week.